Damn.
She's been working on that interphaser for hours.
Any luck?
No, I can't get it to engage.
Have you tried this?
No, boy, what did you do?
I just readjusted
it. It won't cycle down.
It'll be fine.
Baptiste, have you finished with... Baptiste? Phil Boyd? Shit.
Having been transported to a far-flung region of Cambodia, Bridget Baptiste, Brewster Philboyd, and Nora Penick find themselves surrounded by competing factions, hidden interests, and threats to their lives.
I'm going after them.
Me and Grant will go with you.
No, I have to do this myself. You'll hear from me.
Now, Kane has to deal with the exotic threats of Cambodia, save his three friends, and face his destiny once again. But this time, he must do it alone. Outlanders number 32, Evil Abyss, coming February 2006. The blazing glory of dawn flamed in the sky as the Manta's navigational computers brought it on a direct trajectory across the white-capped waters of the South China Sea, then over Vietnam. Within minutes, the craft crossed over the border into Cambodia. Signaled by the GPS, the TAV automatically dropped its airspeed to 500 miles per hour. The change in speed roused Kane from a fitful slumber, and he came to full alertness. Swiftly, he oriented himself, then lowered the Manta's altitude to 300 feet and reduced the airspeed even further. As he did so, dawn became a fine, sunny morning. The terrain below looked interesting and rich. The TAV cruised over a seemingly limitless panorama of forested hills and wooded valleys. He glimpsed the mirrored surface of Tonle Sap, dancing with multicolored highlights. Tinted by the early morning sunshine, suffused by streamers of mist curling up from the tree line, the Cambodian jungle looked like an Eden. But he already knew the jungle held nasty surprises. Remembering the half-glimpsed figures from the satellite transmission, he cut in the low-power gravity modifier field, effectively silencing the engines. The rainforest fell away, and he skimmed over rich grasslands. He saw a collection of bamboo houses and tilled fields, all laid out precisely as an estate garden. Although he didn't see anyone, he figured farmers would be rising very soon. Touching the low observability camouflage switch on the control console, an electrical impulse fed through circuitry all over the hull of the Manta. Ambient waves shifted over the bronze colors of the exterior, coating it as if with a film of ink. Within seconds, the TAV was the hue of the early morning sky, melting indistinguishably with it. Below him stretched a vista of huge reservoirs, irrigation canals, and a series of moats and other waterworks. At first glance, their engineering was almost on the level of the architecture of the buildings rising from the plain. Kane decided to move in very slowly and circle Angkor Thom. He initiated the telemetric sensor, hoping to detect a signal from the transponders carried by the three missing people. The instrument registered nothing. He lifted the Manta to 1,000 feet, cut the ramjet thrusters, coasted in on the gravity modifiers. Putting the TAV into a hover position, he looked down. Seeming to float in the air between his eyes and the visor, a column of numbers appeared, glowing red against the pale bronze. When he focused on a distant object, the visor magnified it and provided a readout as to distance and dimension. The huge, multi-towered temple Lakesh had identified as Angkor Wat glistened with early morning dew, but there was no sign of movement anywhere. For a moment, Kane had the impression he was looking down upon a gargantuan alien cemetery, as strange as the citadel of Enki he had seen on the moon. According to Lakesh, a number of the megalithic structures had served as tombs of the Khmer rulers, so it was possible that Angkor Thom was nothing but a miles-long mausoleum. He completed the first pass over the city and was just beginning the second when his point man sense kicked in. He experienced an intense sensation of uneasiness, of apprehension. He looked down and saw the tapered tips of the Angkor Wat towers seeming to shine, becoming almost luminescent. At first, he attributed the light to a dewy reflection of the early morning sun. Then the HUD thermometer icon began flashing. As he looked at it in amazement, the temperature climbed rapidly. First, degree by degree, then in multiple jumps. At the same time, several of the other icons winked out. Kane didn't hesitate. He kicked in the ramjet's full throttle, not worrying about the noise. Acceleration slammed him hard against his chair. The manta shot away from Angkor Thom like a rock launched from a catapult, hurtling in the general direction of Tonle Sap. At the moment, he didn't care about the heading of the Tav as long as it was away from the city. The engine roar skipped and faltered. The ship shuddered. Jockeying the port and starboard maneuvering jets, Kane sent the manta skittering wildly, veering off on another course entirely. He jabbed a series of vent switches on the control panel, hoping that if he opened them, the influx of air would cool down the cockpit. They were all locked in place. The heat inside the manta climbed to 150 degrees. If not for the internal thermostat of the shadow suit he wore and the oxygen provided by the helmet, he would have lost consciousness. He wasn't sure how many miles he put between him and the city when all the CGI icons on the inner curve of his helmet's visor faded away. The manta began to lose altitude. Although he was loath to ditch, Kane reached for the ejector seat lever beneath the pilot's chair. He could come down by glider chute and find the Tav later to remove the supplies and ordnance in the storage compartment. He adjusted his harness and wrenched at the lever. Nothing happened. Kane braced himself and pulled again, but still nothing happened.
Oh, shit.
The manta dropped fast in a dead-stick dive. The ship's wing configuration provided a certain amount of air resistance, but Kane wasn't at all sure it was sufficient to slow the craft's descent and keep it intact, or for him to survive the impact. The ship began to wobble, tipping up on its starboard wing, then on its port side as it plummeted down toward the jungle. Nausea churned in Kane's belly as he watched the horizon slide up and down. Suddenly, a couple of the HUD icons flickered and flashed back to life. He felt a surge of desperate exultation. Whatever had knocked out the manta's power system apparently had a limited range. Not all of the ship's systems came back online, but Kane partly succeeded in stabilizing the manta's attitude so it no longer wobbled. He could feel the vibrations of the powered-up stabilizers rattling through the deck at his feet. A queasy liquid sensation began in his stomach, and the shuddering that racked the Tav from stem to stern didn't help it any. The green mass of foliage still rushed up far too fast. With a sense of detachment that bemused even him, he wondered at his odds of survival. 2-1 against, he concluded, not too pessimistic since it left a margin of error. There was a possibility he would survive. He braced himself against his chair and tried to go limp. He recalled Philboyd mentioning that the Anunnaki had built the mantas with at least 3 different kinds of shock absorbers. They had designed their ships to give the pilots the best chance of survival if the engines failed. The manta skimmed over 3 palm trees, shearing off the tops as if it were a scythe. Flat, wide fronds slapped against the canopy and flattened themselves, effectively blocking Kane's line of sight. Not that there would have been much to see, he reminded himself sourly. The Tav hit the ground on its belly, bounced several times like a flat stone skipping across the surface of a pond, crashed through a wall of foliage and bulldozed its way over fallen logs, snapping saplings like matchwood. The wingtips dragged along snarled tangles of brush. Branches were stripped of leaves and trees of bark as the armored hull whipped past them. King's body strained against the recoil harness and then slammed back into the seat violently. All the air exploded from his lungs as he was engulfed in a thundering wave of shock, followed by pain. The manta slithered along the damp ground like a downsliding boulder, leaving a wide, scoured path in its wake, turf rolling up before it like a strip of carpet. By the time the ship careened to a stop, Kane sagged unconscious in the straps.